Welcome, everyone, to the Nomad on Fire podcast, the show all about the digital nomad lifestyle coupled with financial independence. We'll also be exploring tips and tricks on other lifestyle optimization strategies. I'm your host, Eric. Thanks for being here. Let's jump right in. All right. Alan Kosky, welcome to the Nomad on Fire podcast.
Very happy to be here. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Yeah, excited to be chatting with you again. So I was on your podcast, The New Nomad, I think last week that was. So happy to connect with you again and have you on the show.
You know, it seems like so long ago, even though it was only a couple of weeks back, because things move so fast in this world, don't they?
They sure do. Yeah, time has been flying. But yeah, this should be a really fun one for the listeners today. Definitely want to talk about your travels. Want to talk about investing, retirement. Want to talk about your podcast. Want to talk about insured nomads. So should be a lot of fun and a lot of good topics. But yeah, if you don't mind getting us started, kind of kicking us off with your background and what your story is.
Yeah, it's and I think I'm probably a little older than most of your listeners because you did mention retirement. I did retire and come back, which is an interesting thing. So actually, my career started when I graduated from school, volunteered for a political campaign, and ended up being the congressman's driver and scheduler, which was, and this is in Connecticut, home of insurance. And after a few years of working for a congressman, realizing that you can't get promoted to congressman. You need, especially when you're young, you have to go on to something different. And in Connecticut, where do you end up? You end up in insurance. Ultimately joined Cigna. And many of the folks, I'm sure in this podcast know Cigna is our large provider of healthcare benefits around the world, and very lucky there to actually work with the expatriate and travel medical division there. Transitioned many years later over to United Healthcare, building a travel and medical business. Really interesting because it got me to 70 plus countries. And then just last year, retired, was expecting to just play tennis, stay in good shape and monitor my investments. And then had a opportunity with Insured Nomads where Andrew Jernigan, a compadre of ours, came forward and said, you know, I think for the digital nomad family out there, they need something more. And, you know, we built something that I think is a really unique program that's more than just healthcare. It's the things that, you know, when I had traveled overseas, and if I get time later, I maybe share my travel list. But, you know, I used to always travel with secure Wi-Fi, one of those little fobs, you know, just to keep yourself safe. And we're like, well, if somebody buys a healthcare policy for us, maybe we should put secure VPN into it, because if you're talking to your insurance carrier and you're sending them your social security number or something that's important, you might not want to have that get pinched. So we sat down and we said, how about those times you're sitting at a club lounge just outside a club lounge because you can't get in because you don't have status. And wouldn't it be great if somebody bought our policy and, well, they got healthcare, but if they flight is canceled or delayed, they could go into that lounge and have a better experience. So we sat down and put this whole list together of things that we think, you know, would be helpful for people, but also were helpful for ourselves. So it's one of those interesting things. And Eric, I know you understand this is, you know, during the beginning of COVID, you know, it's really a time for many people to have a great time of reflection. And while for the first 6 weeks of quote unquote retirement and much relaxation and knowing you can't travel anywhere, said, you know what, maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing to go back to work and fill that time void. I'm sure some of your folks out there feel that way.
I was going to say, I was looking at your profile on LinkedIn. Did you retire like right as COVID hit?
It's funny you bring that up. Yes. I actually, my last business call was in San Francisco. And during that presentation at lunch, I went out and that ship that went by, that was the COVID ship that went under the Golden Gate Bridge that had been quarantined. That was literally an hour after my last presentation that I was riding off into the sunset. Wow. And a funny addendum to say, well, not so funny, but it was a learning. So my daughter met me there, and we enjoyed a couple of days at Sandy in San Francisco. And I flew home, and of course, nobody has masks. And then about a week after I got home, my nose starts to run, and I'm feeling tired. And then about 5 days after that, my wife had the rigors, just like you would see on, the CNN Cuomo was talking about how he had night at 3:30 in the morning at the rigors. So we're pretty sure we had COVID on my last trip. And it was a very scary time. And my wife bounced back, but we lost a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And it may be also, as I was talking to Andrew about Insure Nomads, thinking that, you know, maybe giving people good medical information a little earlier, maybe protecting cells better. But really, who knew at that time? And right. At that time, they were saying, don't wear a mask. And, you know, it's one of those learnings that protect yourself. And frankly, talking to my wife even today, I think every time from here on out when she flies, she may wear a mask just for the flu, mm-hmm. for any other sickness. For many of us who traveled to the Far East for many years, we always saw people with masks. And right, Eric, you would sit there and say, that's kind of strange relative to our culture. Probably was a good idea.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was in Southeast Asia the entire time, like January to March of 2020. And yeah, the masks, I mean, there was a lot of people that had masks on all the time anyway, so that wasn't too big of a change for me. One thing you mentioned, though, I think for a lot of people, it was kind of a period of reflection, but I guess kind of take us back to that moment, right? Obviously, you know, very scary and a lot of conflicting information with COVID, but you're about ready to make a major life change, right? And then a worldwide pandemic happens. Can you kind of just take us back to that point in time and how just your thought process on that kind of evolved throughout it?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the reasons I really felt that I wanted to retire and do other things was, frankly, I was tired of conference calls, yeah. which, you know, you just reach the time, you see a beautiful day outdoors, you're like, oh my God, I got 6 hours of conference calls. Now, this is the funny thing. I do more conference calls now than ever, except they're Zoom or, you know, Teams calls, but we can see each other. Back then, most of the conference calls that we were doing at most companies, you didn't see people. So I know some people don't feel comfortable with seeing others. I really think it makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was really scary about that period of time is obviously not knowing where things are heading. And actually, there was a little bit of relief that, hey, I didn't have to be in the fray trying mm-hmm. to figure this out. And of course, I had a lot of good friends from the industry who could give me some good details. And one big advantage, I'll say this too, Delaware never, where I live, Delaware never shut down the physical activities like tennis and mountain biking and hiking and outdoor swimming that allowed us to continue to remain active. And I have a very strong group of friends who play tennis all the time. Now, we had to play with masks. And if somebody had glasses, it was very difficult because the longer the point went, the more it would fog up. But the reason why I mentioned about this is we may do, and what was really strange is when the pandemic started and you just didn't know, everybody would open their own can and only touch the three balls that they handle. Some of us with gloves on one hand. You would serve and then nobody would. And then as time goes on, you learn a little more. All right, we can use one can. Don't necessarily need gloves. Let's just not get within 6 feet of each other. Then time goes on and then, you know, you're wearing masks and you're realizing that you could be with maybe close, you're not trying to get within 6 feet, but if you did run into each other on a miscommunication on an overhead, because you had masks, you weren't going to have a major problem. And it was really interesting how that changed, but it also kept us sane because after we would play tennis, we usually would have a couple beers outside, no matter how cold it was, because you're not inside. And I know a lot of people suffered. I've talked to a lot of people about the lack of getting together with people, and the lack of personal camaraderie. And one of the call outs I'll say to the group that's listening here is, you know, you can always take a walk in the woods. You can always bike. Tennis turned out to be a nice socially distant sport, but some of the states that went like zero tolerance, like my family, I have family also in California. It just is so difficult without the ability to exercise a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that was very helpful, but exercising physically. And then the reason I wanted to come back from retirement was after about 8 weeks, I needed to exercise intellectually. Mm-hmm. And unless you do both, right? And this is what I think is great about like your podcast and doing podcasting. You hear people with these amazing intellectual experiences and stories, right? And mm-hmm. and you share them, it makes a big difference. It really does.
For sure. Yeah, when I wasn't working full-time, I'm so glad that I had the podcast. I would say just to be able to have, you know, stimulating, like really fun, interesting conversations. And then B, sure. I also felt that it helped me be more productive with the podcast because I was still accountable to other people, right? At some points when I was doing the blogging, I struggled, right? Because no one was going to know if I didn't publish a blog post, right? I should have been sitting down and working at 8 a.m., but no one was really monitoring my time. Where the podcast, obviously, if I have a call scheduled with somebody at 6 p.m., you know, I'm not just going to not show up to it. So I feel like that social accountability, you know, helped me be more productive as well.
Well, I think that's a great point. I mean, the weird thing about that first, you know, few weeks of a pandemic is a lot of people I talked to felt like time either stood still or time didn't really matter. Because we were all just kind of like, what are we doing here on things? I would say one other interesting moment at the beginning of the pandemic, and this ties back to, you know, the investing conversation, was then all of a sudden you're sitting at home with tons of time on your hands and you turn the TV on and everything is imploding, you know, in investments. Mm-hmm. And there's two ways of handling that. One way is, oh my God, the sky is falling. Or the other one is, we've been here before, other times, 2008, you know, I'm old enough, folks, that there's been about four of these, frankly, my first one, this is going to date me, is 1987 when things is if you have the long view and if you're a lot younger than me, it's actually, and you have some money on the side, it's actually a really good time to buy a stock, two shares of stock today that was caught would have been only able to buy one, you know, pre to that. And I know a lot of people now look back and say, my God, I wish I had picked up, you know, a distressed stock on that. And, you know, during that period of time, that was a really interesting period of reflection, which is, how do you play this? And Eric, mm-hmm. I mean, I know you probably had the same conflicting feelings on things because you don't want your nest egg and you don't know how bad this is going to be. But on the other hand, if you got an investment window of 3, 4, 5 years, you got to figure it's going to be back.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I got pretty lucky. I had sold some shares of stuff that I had in February, like right before everything.
Oh, wow.
Kind of. Yeah. And that was kind of I had set that aside for like my spending for the year.
Yeah.
Assuming I didn't go back to work. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to start working again. But yeah, I had just gotten lucky. But yeah, I'm definitely a long-term, focused and investor, right? Like I'm investing for my future retirement, you know, well into the future. So these short-term, not that I'm like, you know, the Iceman investor, like it doesn't bother, you know, when you see a bunch of red and your portfolio is way down. I mean, obviously, you know, feel something about it, but I felt that I was hopeful, you know, I knew that at some point in time it was going to bounce back and it, you know, seemed to bounce back sooner than I thought.
Well, trust me, folks, you know, it's if you're in your 30s or your 40s, you've got a lot of time to make it back. If you're in your 60s, you're at late 50s, it's a little bit different. And the other thing I think is going to be an opportunity for people is a lot of us had nothing to do. So we went down to our basements and then we found out we had some really interesting stuff down there. Like I'll share with you, Eric, that something is kind of interesting. I found my 1985 Air Jordans.
Wow.
And by the way, I found out also that on eBay, they're worth over $1,000.
Oh my gosh.
Just like, you know, I talked to a friend who saw people throwing out books and starting doing estate sales. And he's like, you know, there's some really cool old books. He started going and grabbing and buying like boxes of books for a dollar if they looked interesting. And he told me he just sold over a period of time, about $20,000 of books, because some he found were first edition, some were signed. So what I'm saying to many of you, if you have folks that are throwing stuff out or relatives that might be throwing away the proverbial baseball card collection, you might just want to double check to make sure that it's still there, because it's amazing to me that with the amount of cleaning that's been going on, I'm sure there's been some real gems that if people are on the ball and they look at this, they're in the right spot, they can come up with the goods.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you know what to look for, you can find those opportunities to make some money anywhere. For me, my brother and I were just recently talking about it. As kids, we had a large collection of Pokemon cards, but we gave them to my cousins, and I'm not sure what happened to them, but I'm pretty sure we had, you know, all the holographic ones that are worth like $500 now or whatever they are.
Oh my God. It's incredible. 'Cause my sister just found some of the McDonald's. I don't even know what they are. They're still in the plastic. They're like little critters or something. It's like, these could be worth so much. I think so. So the call out to us is, and even if you don't really know what the value is, as long as you can slip away and grab your phone and Google something up and then return to that tag sale, you might just find a very good payback on that.
For sure. Well, Alan, I think this is a good segue into investing. So I guess kind of throughout your working career, what were kind of some of your goals around investing in retirement? Were you always a pretty diligent investor your entire career? And what were... what did you choose to invest in? What was kind of your strategy?
Well, I think you and I agree on this. Index funds make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. The real key is getting started early. So I bought my first basic mutual fund. I barely knew what they were when I was about 26 years old. Actually, I even remember the fund. It was Invesco Leisure, which is now called AIM Leisure. You know, a couple of things with investing, you know, the longer you invest, obviously the better. I thought index funds were great. The one difference that my dad and I worked together on, and he's still with us at age 87 and a sage investor, if I do say so, is we always felt that we need to have a little bit of a venture fund, your own personal venture fund. Mm-hmm. And you could pick an arbitrary number. I picked about 10%. When I was talking to him once, I have a feeling he might have been as high as 25 and was very fortunate with his picks. But one of the things with this venture fund, and all of us run across products that we like every day or we're early adopters on things. If you just take some of those companies that you think are marvelous, that you don't think everybody's caught on to yet, and you just go on and check and see if it's a new stock or on there and you buy it, you could be in so early. I mean, everybody always asks like, well, geez, how did we miss out on Amazon? You know, well, you know, I remember at the beginning, Amazon, you know, people were like, well, Walmart and Kmart and Target are never going to be displaced. And, you know, now you look back on it and you say, well, geez, should have bought Amazon stock. But there was people who were early believers who did that. And I'll say this, in my venture fund, one of the great things about, you know, being in an industry where you meet a lot of interesting people, I got involved with a company that I knew nothing about called America Online. At the time, they were sending out discs to people's houses to hook up to something called the internet. Like, what is that? But the people there seemed to be impressive. And, you know, you put in your little venture fund, which at the time isn't much, say, you know, I'll throw $1,000 at that. And then you go forward, it becomes AOL Time Warner. And then you move, you know, you move on. So my point to folks is everybody can do it. Now, you might lose, but it's your 10% fund. My dad was fortunate. He bought one of the first opportunities to get public storage, which all of us now look around the United States and say, my God, what a fantastic. So Eric, I know, you know, the people out there, they might say, well, geez, you know, you look at Fidelity and all these really amazing mutual fund managers. They just find companies because people say this is something to look at. And we're all looking at things every day. I'm sure you've seen things in there. You're like, man, I knew that was a winner. I'm going to invest in it, or I wish I did.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it keeps investing fun too, to have that whatever percentage of kind of your venture fund or your fun money or whatever you want to call it to those products or companies that you use every single day, or if it's, you know, a friend's business or something that you want to help out and invest in. I think it same thing, it kind of makes you aware and kind of look for those opportunities.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's two edges of the coin. One is, you know, we want to invest and have our money make money. Mm-hmm. And then we don't want to spend in bad ways that our money costs us money, you know, like card fees, et cetera, on things. You know, like for me, I'll be honest with you. I always drove a second generation car, not a first gen. You know, it might be one owner. It still drives great. You know, But my dad said something to me that makes a lot of sense, and I wish I'd gotten on early. He says it's better to buy one thing that's really good than buy a lot of stuff that's junk. And I'll mention to you, it's most of the stuff that's in this house today was the good stuff that we bought that withstood the test of time. It may have been a little more expensive at the beginning, at things. And, you know, so you don't have to be, for lack of a better word, cheap about things, but you got to be intelligent, and you say to yourself, you know, if I buy that better computer now with more memory, I probably won't have to be turning it in a short period of time on things. And so I've always felt that it's so important to have your money making you money, not costing you money. And if you look at the United States, the numbers isn't really promising on the amount of Americans who have a negative net worth, which is amazing to me, right? I haven't seen the latest numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's 50-50 people with a negative net worth versus a positive net worth, which is a really hard thing.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully with, you know, us talking about it and more people getting the word out about investing and financial independence and just, you know, online and the different apps, like it's so easy to get started with just a small amount of money. I mean, have you heard or used Acorns?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I think back in 2015, I just, you know, I saw an ad or something for Acorns and I was real gung ho in my investing and just trying to challenge myself and ramp it up. And I mean, you know, It's just a small amount of money that comes out every month. Like I hardly even notice it, but I have a you know, decent amount of money in my Acorns account now. So it's amazing what it can grow into if you're just putting a little bit away.
Eric, I'll mention one other thing, and this will lead to the best investing story I ever heard.
All right.
First off, it also helps you this is going to sound funny, find an older person who's been through the wars before.
Yeah.
So it may seem funny. I still talk to my dad and his friends. So I was with my dad and he says, well, you think we're good investors? I'm going to call my buddy Carl over here. And this, now I'm down to visualize the scene. I'm down in Florida. It's a senior living place. Carl ambles over. Carl looks like he's like mid 80s, has a tough time walking, but he's in the beautiful sun of Florida. And says, Carl, tell us how you got the money to be here in Florida. And Carl goes, I was a train conductor on the New York subway when there was train conductors. And this was in the 70s. And he says, I didn't have a lot of money. But I read in the paper that the city of New York was going to go broke. And the federal government was going to not bail them out. And the bonds were going to, like, 5 cents on the dollar. And I said to myself, the greatest country in the world isn't going to let the greatest city in the world go bankrupt. So I went to my bank and remortgaged my house. And I bought all the New York City bonds I could get. And then when the federal government came in and said, we're going to back those bonds, it went back from a nickel per share or a dime per share to par. And I made my money. And if I didn't do that, I'd still be living in New York. Now, the reason I bring that to the people's attention on this podcast is the people who are the smart money, you know, were like, well, this could go bankrupt. We're not going to get in. It was the common sense wisdom. I just love the common sense wisdom. The greatest country on this planet isn't going to let the greatest city go under, which, you know, is not great investing philosophy, but it's great knowledge. And he took advantage of it. And to this day, that's the type of thing, whenever I look at an investment, would Carl have said something like that? And, you know, so I'll just drop the mic on that one. But that left me dumbfounded. On investment story. So folks, talk to some old folks. and it's a good thing to do anyways, but you may find something that opens your mind to other opportunities in the investment world.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that story. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I think that's a great piece of life advice in general. Like, I personally love talking to people of different generations, right? People just going through different phases of life, right? Or having different experiences and looking at the world in a different way. And I think it helps me get a more comprehensive view if I talk to people from different generations that have had, you know, different life experience.
I'm totally with you. And, you know, I love talking to, whether you're young or old, it's also a great way to figure out what products are hot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, and this is interesting. I read a story once that one of the mutual fund guys who did very well, he really was just tracing what his kids were doing, because what they were buying was the emerging products. Now, I haven't gone down that far, because, like we talked about, pretty much an index investor, and every now and then with a venture fund. But I'll even give you an example, like even recently in my venture fund. So everybody was investing a lot of times in the vaccine manufacturers, saying this is going to be great. And it could be. My mind went to, I'm going to go to who makes those vials that all the vaccine comes in? Well, Corning does. So I bought Corning stock, and it's the old thing that, you know, when there was the gold rush in California, the gold miners didn't get as rich as the guy who sold them the blue jeans and pickaxes and the shovels, right?
Yeah.
So I a lot of times go down the chain a little bit to, you know, who is selling you that? And sometimes that's not a bad philosophy either.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think that's a good one as well. Cool. Alan, wanted to shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about traveling a little bit. So you said you've been to 75 countries. Is that right?
75 countries. Yes. Some a little dicier than others.
Okay.
Yes.
You're here here in one piece, right? Doing good. What were most of those, like, personal travels, or mostly for work, or kind of?
It's about 50-50. You'll laugh. After the 2008 economic meltdown, I bought myself an around the world ticket for $2,000.
Wow.
So I figured, what's a great time to go? And by the way, that's another thing, folks. Take advantage. Sometimes you'll see these things because nobody was going. So I went around the world on my own with a friend. Both of our friends, my friend and I, our wives were like, you guys go, because the places you're going, we want no part of. just a couple, you know, tips on there and making your money go far. Always fly west. And we flew a lot of red eyes, because you basically sleep till you get in. Like I said, the airfare was really inexpensive. We would spend most of our money on at least having a decent hotel, and you want to have great food. But, you know, in many of the countries you're traveling to, you could buy the best meal in town, and it's still very inexpensive in Bangkok, Helsinki, Tallinn, Estonia, wherever. But, I, you know, from a travel perspective, you know, picking your spots. And the other thing I'll mention to folks is a lot of the countries I've been to were stable at that time. They might be unstable now. Take a look at places. And if you really want to get there and things are good, go now. Because I went to Ukraine before any of the troubles there, and it was wonderful. And then 6 months later, all of a sudden, a lot of strange things go on with the border crisis there. So it's quite interesting. But if you want, I've got some tips to keep yourself healthy on these sojourns that might be non-traditional.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's hear them.
All right. Well, you know, a couple of them. And I have to admit, some of these also came from other folks who shared stuff with me. Like, for instance, I never trust the hotel safe because, you know, you forget the combo and they come right upstairs and open it up, which could tell me they could probably get in there. I often travel with a drop wallet when I'm in dicey places, which is, you know, a wallet. If you're mugged, you give them the wallet with a little bit of money and your least important credit card, but you keep your more important stuff with you. I don't put luggage tags on my bags because I don't want somebody coming up to me like, hey, Mr. Koski, I'm your ride, but they saw it off your luggage tag.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so that's an interesting one. In some places, I travel with a golf umbrella, which is a little longer than a rainy umbrella. It helps me when it's raining. You also when it's really sunny, but it also gives you a little distance if you need it. Frankly, I learned that one living in New York City in the late 1980s, taking the 7 train back at 2 a.m. in the morning. So I'll just say that that one was learned in the U.S. on that. A doorstop to put under the door, because a lot of times somebody could knock into the door through the keychain up top. Always stayed away from where the cars roll into the hotel in case there's a car bombing. Always have an in case of emergency number on my phone. Would always stay at the 8th floor or below, because if there's a fire, equipment can't get much higher than that. Frankly, the 6th floor is probably safer. One thing that ties back to insured nomads, always made sure to buy travel medical and evacuation coverage, because I didn't want to have a nasty surprise and certainly wanted to have evacuation coverage if I got really injured, which could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. On that, try to buy something that would have a travel tracking function so people could tell where I was. Always brought a secure Wi-Fi fob with me to make sure people didn't steal my information.
That's huge.
That's a big one. And then always made sure I knew where the local hospital or clinic that most of the expats would go to. And I didn't ask the concierge at the hotel that, because usually the concierge is a local and they'll say something like, hey, Eric, the best hospital for you to go is this one, and tell them I sent you. Because then they obviously have a little bit of it, have a little bit of a deal there. That's probably not a great way to get things. I also print everything. Print your boarding passes. Don't go electronic. I mean, I remember trying to leave Russia once. The computer was down. And unless you printed something out, you were not perhaps getting on that flight.
Oh, wow.
On things. And then maybe one other thing I'll mention in my expertise of global travel from a healthcare perspective is I always made sure that I had primary coverage when I traveled, meaning if I had a medical claim, it would be taken care of, not secondary coverage, where they would say, you got to send it to some other carrier first before it gets to us. I wanted to make sure that I had that help. And I know that's a lot of travel tips quick. On my LinkedIn page, I've got a little travel tip thing there if anybody wants to look. But it's so important, you know, in this day and age to kind of be forearmed, and that in case of emergency number would turn out to be very important, because you'll find out if you're in a really stressful situation, a lot of times it gets hard to figure phone numbers. It's so nice just to hit ICE on your phone and you go to that security or that help that you need. Or have a panic button on things. I'm sure as you've traveled, you've got probably a few more to add to that list. But that's my, I wish I had a David Letterman type of top 10 list, but that's my 25 items.
Yeah, those are awesome. I really appreciate you sharing those. And then I think that'll be a good transition into talking about insured nomads. But I did have one quick question before we talk about that. So you mentioned the hotel safe. I usually don't use those either. I don't want to give away any secrets, but what do you usually do if you want to like store valuables in your room or anything?
To me, this is going to sound strange. First off, I always leave the do not disturb up, and I don't want people to clean my room. Mm-hmm. But even if they do, I hide it quite often in plain sight. Mm-hmm. I won't say where, but it would have to be somebody who wants to look at something so totally innocuous.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, hey, what is this? What's the Sports Illustrated that this person is reading? And then go to page whatever and somehow find it.
Right.
But I hide stuff in plain sight, figuring that might be a better approach. How about yourself? I mean, you don't want to give away trade secrets either, but I find hiding in plain sight often works.
Yeah, I've hid stuff before, but then I feel like sometimes I've lost things doing that. So I usually have like this isn't the most secure. So even if, you know, somebody wanted to steal something from me, it's, you know, if somebody really wanted to, they could still get whatever they wanted. Yeah. But I usually like will try to hide it away in like the closet, maybe cover it up with stuff. You could still see it, but you'd kind of have to be looking for it. But I usually try to, just with my luggage locks, I'll tie the two bags together.
Good idea. Yeah.
That way, like, I guess my thinking is if somebody's going to take it, it's not like they're going to be able to carry like two bags together because they're heavy and full of stuff. And obviously the luggage tags are pretty, you could cut through those pretty easily. But I still feel like you'd have to have some sort of somewhat heavy, like I don't think you get through them with a normal pair of scissors. Like you'd have to have some sort of like pliers or bolt cutter or something. So I don't know. There's not really too much you can do, but try to do the most you can.
It's a great idea. And one other thing I'll mention is I always carry everything in my front pocket.
Yep.
You know, that, to me, the best tip I actually had about hiding stuff is I had a friend who just puts it in the front pockets of their pants. You know, whatever they're not wearing. And then they make sure it's under all their dirty clothes because people don't like to go underneath people's dirty clothes.
Uh-huh.
So there's a little bit of that going on too.
Yeah, that's a good tip as well. I would say like you can definitely hide stuff in your bag. If somebody doesn't take your entire bag, it might be in a spot that if they were just looking through it real quickly, they wouldn't expect it to be there and don't find it.
I think the key thing is right. You probably feel the same way I do. As long as my passport, and I always carry a copy of my passport. As long as my passport, my phone and my wallet, my not drop wallet is somewhere in range. I'm feeling good. You can take everything else. We'll replace it.
For sure. For sure. Cool. Well, I think this is a good segue into talking about insured nomads. Can you kind of tell us what that's all about and maybe a little bit more of how you got connected with Andrew and how you got involved.
Andrew is an interesting gentleman and he's been living overseas in Ghana and the Netherlands and other places. And of course with my travels. So like I said, we compared notes on ways that we could support people. We want more people to travel. We want more people to pack up and live somewhere for a year. But we also realized that a lot of people felt like when they worked for corporations, they'd have all these tools because they'd be under a corporate plan that would have evacuation and medical and corporate security and whatever. And we said, you know what? We can build something through our InsurTech platform that could give people the security, the comfort, the healthcare coverage. People can use the app. They can use the app to get a panic button the other thing is healthcare in global programs are very complex. Let's just make it easy. You got an app. The app gives you some of the different tools. You can take a picture of your claim if you have to pay it and just, send it in. We'll give you a payment card. So maybe you don't even have to do that. We try to pay direct to providers. We just said that the individual should have as good of a feeling about when they travel or go to live somewhere as somebody who's sitting under the richest corporate plan. Mm-hmm. And let's do it at a price point that is no greater than lesser policies that don't give you great service or a lot of these extra items. And the other thing we felt is let's help somebody all year. So if somebody buys our program for a trip, we're still going to give them, once they're a member of ours, we're going to give them the app with all these services for the year, because then they'll remember that we're trying to keep them safe and we want to work with them. So one of the advantages of being a virtual company where you don't have to pay a lot of rent and have a lot of bricks and mortar is you can put more back into the product for people. So wish us luck, everyone. We're an insurtech that's trying to do things a little different. And we're trying to reach out to people who, you know, feel that they can handle their mobility issues, but want a little bit more. So thank you for the question, Eric. We're really passionate about trying to support people and have them feel confident that they're going to get the support they need.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I definitely wanted to ask you about it. So right now you have travel insurance, and then is the international health insurance, has that been released yet, or is that coming soon?
Yep. It's just been released. So those are great products. We've got a fair amount of people that have already started to sign up that are the digital nomads, let's say, that are gone for a year or two. We've got a fair amount of people that have gone to live in Portugal or Costa Rica or Estonia for a year or two. So they can buy the annual program. And the difference between the travel program is, remember, the travel is really, you know, somebody might get sick or have an accident. We're going to take care of that claim. We're going to do an evacuation. The people are going for a year or two. It's more comprehensive. It's got all that covered. But, you know, if somebody has a mental health issue or they want a routine physical, you know, it's, you know, prescription drugs, vision, dental, you can buy just like you would a typical policy on things. So it's a lot more comprehensive. But at the end of the day, what everybody wants to do, be honest, is just go to the doctor or the hospital or the clinic and have us just pay the provider directly, because nobody wants to, and we're trying to do that for you too. So it's got something cool and different. And InsurTech is, you know, uses artificial intelligence, geopositioning, and machine learning. And I'll give you an example how that works. Just the other day, I live in Delaware. There was a shooting at a place that was relatively close to me. I got an alert that I shouldn't go to the location just because I had geopositioning on my phone, and the artificial intelligence pulled down a newsflash that there had been a local shooting near where my geopositioning was. And I got a message. Wow. That to me is InsurTech in simple forms. It's a lot more complex in some other ways, but yeah. So if you travel overseas and you're at a city and something happens, there's a riot or something, we're going to be able to geoposition and say, hey, by the way, you might just not want to be center city right now.
Right.
Or you may want to be if you're an adventurer. It's your call.
Yeah, absolutely. That's super helpful, especially if you know, there's a language barrier, right? And you're, you know, having difficulty, you know, translating or kind of seeing the local news or what's going on. Yeah.
Exactly. And by the way, that's a big thing too, is, you know, be able to reach back. And even this, medical terms are different outside the U.S., you know, if you're an American or outside most people's home country. So if somebody's unsure, they can reach in to us and we'll say, this is actually called that there, or your prescription drug you forgot is called X there. You know, a lot of times it's just giving people good information to make them feel comfortable.
Absolutely. Awesome. And then how about the new Nomad podcast? So always love talking to a fellow podcaster. Wanted to ask you about that. I was curious, is that associated with Insured Nomads, or is that kind of just a fun thing that you and Andrew are doing on the side?
Yeah, it's affiliated only in the sense that you can go to insurednomads.com and download it. We really wanted to kind of keep it separate and distinct, because that podcast is trying to give people the confidence of hearing other people's stories that they can do it. They can go to places. The other day we had a gentleman on there that basically buys old school buses, retrofits them, and then hits the road, you know, or somebody who's decided to just pack up and go to a different country and talked about some of the issues there. So, we do kind of get into health insurance and safety and security and now and then, but at the end of the day, it's not about us. It's about the story of others. And you were wonderful telling your story, you know, and we just want to give people good ideas, because you know what, as I talk to a lot of people, they probably ask the same question of you they do of us is, how do I get started? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, give me some unique idea. Because, you know, a lot of people are not comfortable a lot of times, you know, embarking upon something unless they have just enough information to be dangerous. And I think, you know, both your podcast and our podcast are helping people have that type of feeling of, you know, I think I got enough confidence here that I can take this on. I hope you agree.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love sharing, you know, I love when people on the show share, you know, actionable tips, but then a lot of it too is just kind of that inspiration, right? I feel like in any endeavor, once you hear enough people's stories and you see people being successful in whatever it is you're trying to pursue, it gives you that confidence like, hey, maybe I could do that too. I've heard about all these other people that are doing it and doing it well.
Well, you know, this is what I love about the Nomad on Fire podcast. First off, you also bring in enthusiasm. We try to do the same. and you know, the thing is, we have a lot of people who have been cooped up for 15 months. I think the timing for all of you listening out there, just like in 2008, when I bought the Round the World ticket and there was an empty world ahead of me and with some great experience. And by the way, people are overjoyed to see you because they haven't seen in a while. There's going to be such a great opportunity in the next year.
Oh,
and, you know, I know Eric, you, me, Andrew, and others, we want people to feel like, yeah, let's take advantage of that. And for those who sat there and said, when this is over, I want to go on to something different. And as a student of history, after the pandemic of 1918, 1919, there was the Roaring Twenties, where people went and explored. Well, we're in the 20s again. Let's hope the Roaring Twenties in a good way happens and people feel emboldened to travel again and experience, whether in the U.S. or out. I'm hoping to see you this year as I come down to the Grand Prix that's going to be happening in Texas. I know Canada was just canceled. Guess what? Austin is next this year. So let's get out and we're going to see things, you know, experience something different.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah, we'll have to meet up. I like that analogy too. Yeah, hopefully, I do think it is going to be the Roaring Twenties for digital nomads. I mean, I've been trying to chat with, you know, as many people as I can on the show about it because I'm so excited to kind of see what it looks like, right? Just when travel, you know, kind of fully opens back up everywhere, and what those kind of new offerings and stuff are going to be. I think there's going to be a lot more, you know, co-work, co-living type places. It's definitely going to be an exciting time to be a remote worker and traveler.
I think the other big trend you're going to see is, I think corporations are going to, you know, everybody's talking about, are corporations going to bring people back into the office or out? That may or may not happen. But I've talked to a fair amount of folks that feel that corporations are going to be more amenable to hiring individuals who want to work their own, whether it's called, you know, on a consultancy basis, mm-hmm. or, you know, somebody who's not in the corporate family, but wants to do the thing. So I think there's going to be a great opportunity for your audience out there to do their own thing and still be within a corporate realm, but control their own hours and their own life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got so many people that have so many unique talents that it's going to be a whole new world.
For sure. Yeah, sounds fantastic. I'm excited to see how it all evolves. Cool. Alan, this has been a lot of fun. Just got one last question here for you. What is a new habit that you've implemented maybe recently that has really helped you out, either from a productivity perspective or just happiness, life enjoyment? Could be any of the above.
You know, this is going to sound kind of interesting because I fell out of it for a while, is I've gotten really good about making lists.
Nice.
I forgot, you know, for a while there, I forgot writing down, like, here's the things I need to do. And then you finish the day and you're like, oh, I know I forgot to do that. But it's also lists of fun things. Like I mentioned one to you, one of my fun things is I wanted to see a Grand Prix this year. We bought tickets to Grand Prix up in Montreal. It's been canceled. Well, guess what? The next one we see is down in your neck of the woods. I love lists, and it's made me a lot more effective. and it's even like as goofy as I'm looking at one here. Like I got stuff like sell old stuff, it's just one of those things. So I hope that helps others, but I find if I write it down and you cross some things off, but it's not exactly a bucket list because there's so many different lists every day for different things. Like here's the 10 books I want to read. Mm-hmm. Here's the people I want to talk to. Here's the 10 companies I want to look at for maybe my little venture fund. Mm-hmm. But I like lists.
I love that. Yeah, I'm a big, big fan of lists as well. Awesome.
And my wife leaves me a lot of lists that aren't quite as exciting. So I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, awesome. Alan, this is a blast. I'm so glad that we got to sit down and chat today. If people want to connect with you, they want to learn more about you and your story, where's the best place they can find you at online?
Oh, well, the best place is insurednomads.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, Alan Kosky. I also have my top list of ways to keep yourself safe, or through the podcast world. Always eager to chat with others. So, travel well, everyone. I love to hear from people at different times, different places. I can be found mostly on LinkedIn. I'm an old fashioned person. I'm not hugely social media, on that.
Awesome. All right. Yeah. I'll link them up in the show notes so people can check it out. Cool. Alan, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Nomad on Fire podcast. If you like the show, if you could do us a huge favor, and please subscribe on whatever platform that you're using to listen to this. If you could also leave a 5-star review, that would really help us out and allow the show to be available to more people. See you next time on the Nomad on Fire podcast.